Okay, Rabbi, for Yom HaTzma'ut, which is today, we talk about the blessings which we have with Eretz Yisrael, with the land of Israel, and also the challenges which we are facing now. And what's interesting is that the day of Hei Iyar on the in the calendar of Sfirat HaOmer, we're counting the days from Pesach till Shavuot, and the 49 days when you say the various prayers. So each of those days has a certain characteristic, and Hei Iyar turns out to be in the Kabbalah descriptions of the days Yesod Shebetiferet. Yesod Shebetiferet. Yesod means fundamental, and Tiferet means beauty. So we're talking about something which apparently is very fundamental and beautiful. And what's interesting also is that the Kabbalistic idea of Yesod and Tiferet is that Yesod is a fundamental situation on the ground, but not yet visible. When things come out, which is the next level, it's called Malchus, kingdom. But Yesod means that all the factors are here. They're all in place, but maybe not yet functioning the way they should when they finally get put together. It's like getting all the parts of the car. They're all right here. We haven't put the car together. Or even have the car, but haven't put any gasoline in. By missing the key. So if you have your soul, you have everything which is fundamentally important, but it's not yet really operating completely. And Tiferet means it's something very beautiful. So maybe we could really say that in a certain way, the Jewish state today is a Yesod, something very fundamental. It's a foundation. It's a Tiferet. It's very beautiful. But it's far from operating the way it should. It's far from the Malchut, the kingdom, which we dream of and which we hope will come one day through this Jewish state. So let's talk about some of the blessings of the state of Israel and why we celebrate the Yom HaTzmut. Now, it is a great halachic issue, as well as a very ironic historical fact, that the Yom HaTzmut, the day of Jewish-Israeli independence, when they declare the state, comes out in the middle of Sfirat HaOmer, which is the traditional counting of days from Pesach till Shavuot. However, those days have traditionally been days of sadness, of mourning. And as our rabbis explained to us, it's because of the deaths of the students of Rabbi Akiva, the great Torah leader of the Jews, who led a revolution against the Roman Empire about 150 years or so after the destruction of the Temple. And the revolution was successful for about 3 years. The Jews set up their own kingdom, and were even thinking of rebuilding the Temple in Jerusalem. And then the Romans came and destroyed the Jewish people who were at the time, and Rebbe Akiva was eventually put to death himself, and 24,000 of the students of his died, and it created a whole national mourning for this tremendous tragedy, which was the final destruction, really, of the population or of Israel at the time, about 2,000 years ago. And we have not come back to the country en masse since then. So the state of Israel is really coming back to pick up where Rebbe Akiva unfortunately left off. So it is an incredible an incredible turn of historical events that at the very time of this deep national mourning for the destruction of the students of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva himself and the Bar Kokhba revolution and the fact that that was the end of the Jewish settlement of Israel at the Second Temple, at that very period of the year, during the month of Iyar, which is at the center of the mourning according to all opinions, no matter how you keep the laws of Sfirat HaOmer, everybody agrees that in the month of Iyar, this period between Rosh Chodesh Iyar and Lag BaOmer, about 2 weeks, according to every halachic view, this is for sure a time of Avelut, of deep national mourning, and Dafka, at that very, this central 2 weeks of Chodesh Iyar, between Rosh Chodesh and Lag BaOmer, Dafka then, God Almighty had history call forth the incredible event of a Jewish state being declared again. And what Rebbe Akiva tried to resurrect with his Bar Kokhba revolution, in which 24,000 of his students died, and according to the sages, hundreds of thousands of regular Jews were massacred by the Romans, who finally stamped it out and drove the Jews off the land for good. Dafka, during these 2 weeks of deep mourning, commemorating the final revolt and battle for Israel and Jerusalem, which was ultimately, unfortunately, lost by the Jews, nearly 2,000 years later, at that very time, during these very 2 central weeks of deep national mourning, the Jewish state is again proclaimed. And thank God we have 56 years in which we are able to celebrate its existence and witness in these 56 years a population of 600,000 Jews turn into 6 million. And the 6 million number, of course, is a very significant number because it also represents the 6 million martyrs of the Holocaust, as well as the fact that a country which, when it was proclaimed, did not have Jerusalem, today has Jerusalem, and is close to the historical borders of the times of the prophets. And I hope no one minds me saying this, but it's my own opinion, better or for worse, you may agree or disagree, I hope that the Sharon plan will never come to fruition, and that the land of Gaza, which is part of the historical lands of the Jews in Israel, will remain in the hands of the Jews and remain Israeli, and the Arab problem will solve, or it'll be solved in good way, but it has nothing to do with the fact that this land belongs to us. So it is an amazing fact that that Dafka, during these 2 weeks of a tremendous mourning for the destruction of the original Jewish state, Dafka, during these 2 weeks, the state is reborn. So it is a beautiful moment. It's a very fundamental event, and that's why the Kabbalistic name for the day of the fifth day of Iyar today, which is Yesod Shebet Tiferet, something very fundamental, rooted in beauty, is really apropos. So I think one of the blessings which we have, besides the fact that our land has been restored and Jerusalem restored, is the reunification of the Jewish people from around the world. So many different kinds of Jews are now living in Israel. And our sages have told us, again, going back to the destruction of Rebbe Akiva and his followers in the Bar Kokhba revolution, the destruction of the Second Temple, and all the Jewish suffering which has occurred in the last 1,900 plus years. It's all a result of the fact that the Jewish people were riddled and full of sinat chinam, hatred for one another. Those of us who've read a little bit about the history of the Second Temple know that at the end there was an amazing amount of factions, people who were pro-Roman, people who were anti-Roman, people who wanted to make revolutions, people who didn't, all kinds of religious practices. There were Judeo-Christians starting, there was Sadukim, Perushim, Issyim, Karayim. There's so many different groups of Jews, and each of the groups hated one another. And according to our sages, this is the root cause of the destruction. So, the fact that we're living in a time, and we see that in the country of Israel, are all the kinds of Jews. Ashkenazi, and Sephardim, South American, Siberian, Indian, South African, from every corner of the world, every color of skin, every language, all coming back to their homeland, and not just a few, we're talking about 6 million. So this is an incredible blessing to see the reunification of so many different kinds of Jews coming back together. And this reminds me, personally, of the Haftorah, which we read at the end of Parshas Vayigash, where it says that God says when the final redemption will come, in the book of Yechezkel, he says, I will take the stick of Joseph, and I will take the stick of Judah, which have been split, and I will bring them together to become one stick. Because even then, the prophets also had splits. There was a kingdom of Joseph, called the kingdom of Israel. There was a kingdom of Judah, called the kingdom of Judah, two different Jewish kings, and always at odds with one another. So the prophet says, in the ultimate redemption, they'll come together again, and there'll be one king. And in that prophecy, which we read in Torah reading once a year, Vayigash, there's a lot of steps which the prophet Ezekiel predicts will happen. And as you look at it, and I recommend you all afterwards go take out your Chumash and look at the Haftorah, the reading of the prophet for Parshat Vayigash, and you see it's very, very remarkable. The first thing that he says after putting together two sticks, it says, God says, "V'kibatzti otam misaviv ve'heveti otam lad matam." I will gather them from all around, and I will bring them back to their land. Well, this is exactly what has happened in the last 100 years, since the year 1900 to the year 2004. God has taken us from around the world and brought us back to our land, whether it was Jews from South America, North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, from the four corners of the earth. So this prophecy has been fulfilled and it's ongoing. The only real big group of Jews left are American Jews, and I just think by the principle of induction, which says if something has happened 50 times, is probably going to happen the 51st time. So 50 countries, or actually probably 120 countries, have sent Jews to Israel en masse. I would assume that America, the United States of America, will also do that. And personally, I've invested in the future. I bought myself my house in Israel, and I'm ready. We're all ready. We can go anytime. One of the things, I never put any steam into the house, and it's up in the hills around Shiloh, which is Yerushalayim weather, beautiful place, great in the summer, very, very cold in the winter, and I've never been there in winters, except for a short visit, so when we move, we'll put in the steam, central heating. So everybody should be smart and invest now. It's the best real estate we can buy. A piece of land in Israel, an apartment in Israel, and everybody's made, just in terms of money, you become very wealthy. My grandfather, rest in peace, bought a piece of land in Israel around the year 1930 for about $10,000 at the time, and today it's worth $2 million. So just hold on to it and it gets more and more. However, we've all come back to the land, and thank God, many, many countries. But the next verse says, "Va'asiti otam l'goy echad ba'aretz ba'harei Yisrael, u'melech echad yeluchulam melech." I will make them one nation in the country, in the mountains of Israel, with one king will be the king. So, in a certain way, this has also been fulfilled. We are one nation, we have one king, so to speak, one prime minister, one system. However, the idea in Tanakh that the Jewish people is goy echad ba'aretz, one nation in the world, has to be understood in two levels. On the simple level, it's a nation unto itself. So in Israel, I don't have to say, I'm a Russian Jew. Like when we have our friends from Russia come to America, so who are you? Who are they? A Russian Jew. A French Jew. An American Jew. No, in Israel, I'm a Jew. I'm an Israeli. I'm not going to give any appellations. So it's an individual entity unto itself. But we all know that it's not enough just to physically be there and vote in the same political system. In the Tanakh, in our prophets, it's clearly stated again and again and again that the Jewish people is not just a nation among nations, indistinguishable, but a unique nation, a special nation which has a special mission to bring God's word to the world and to live a God-like, godly, spiritual life, which will be a model for everybody else, and of course fulfill God's reason for creating this world, which is for people to become God-like and spiritual. And we have to create a nation which has this mission and this raison d'etre. We have to be a nation which has common beliefs and values. Not just we're living in the same piece of real estate, but we're moving in the same direction to the same goal. And this is still far from reality in our country, which we call the State of Israel. The fact that all of us who either live there or support it or go there or identify with it, all of us have a common enemy, the Arab terrorists, who now has become an enemy of the United States and the West, but we were blessed by being the first ones. Usual Jews are usually the first ones when tough times come. So we're the lightning rod that discovered Arab terrorism and brought it into the world, so to speak, and now everybody else is enjoying it. That is not enough. The fact that we are targets and have, unfortunately, the same common enemy, that is not enough to create a unified people. And when we were, and I go back to the Bible, when we were standing at the Red Sea, and Paro was coming with his soldiers to massacre us, our sages say that the Jewish people, all faced by the same enemy, split into four or five different opposing camps. One group of Jews said, "Let's go fight the Egyptians."
Another group said, let's surrender to the Egyptians. And the third group said, let's commit suicide and jump into the sea. And the third group said, let's just start running away. And they were at one another's throats, fighting and fighting, split about what to do against this enemy of Pharaoh, until God told Moshe, there was one group which was praying to God, and God said to Moshe, that group I'm listening to, forget about all the opinions. Split the sea, I'll take care of it. So we have a common enemy. Does that make unity? It didn't do it thousands of years ago for the Jews at the Red Sea. And it's not doing it today. You have every opinion under the sun among Israelis. What to do with the Arabs and Arab terrorism and how to achieve peace. Some say fight. Some say surrender. Some say give land. Some say conquer land. Every possible idea. Because a common enemy does not define a common agenda, a common set of values, a common lifestyle for a people. A people cannot be defined by the fact we're all fighting the same enemy. We need a people which has a common set of values and beliefs and character. And the defining character of the Jewish people since its birth has been the Torah. Nothing else has ever been the defining characteristic of our nation. And therefore, nothing else will ever be, in my humble opinion, the defining characteristic. And every other defining idea will fail. So therefore, socialism, which was a big idea for Jews at the turn of the 1900s, has failed to produce a common Israeli identity, even though it's probably the most socialist system in the world. And I guess budding lawyers should know about that before you decide to be a lawyer over there. Other ideas, the social experiments, agricultural, let's forget about being business people, let's become farmers and live on kibbutzim, has failed to become the defining characteristic of the country. Going to the army, fighting, being a soldier, has failed. And it's not a surprise to me as a rabbi, who knows Jewish history a little bit, that this will has failed to define us as a common country and people, because Judaism has always been the defining characteristic of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people without Judaism, there's not a Jewish people. And therefore, it is no surprise to me that in the last 15 years, approximately 1 million non-Jews have been invited in by the Israeli government and given citizenship automatically as Israelis because they're related to a Jew. They're related to a Jew. They have an uncle, a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, a son-in-law, a daughter-in-law who's Jewish. Therefore, they have become more in return, they are considered Israeli, I guess, Jews. I don't know what else they put in their stamps, but whatever. It's absurd. You create a Jewish country and then you invite non-Jews in and make them citizens automatically, so it's not a Jewish country. Because a different kind of definition, instead of defining it according to Torah, we define some other way. And it's also no wonder that this kind of an approach leads you to give the land away for this or X, Y, or Z reason. Now, in order for us to return to our central spiritual roots, it's very difficult, it's a very difficult task. And it needs certain basic things to achieve it. First is education. I can't understand how a Jewish country can come in 39 out of 45 Western countries in tests of children in math and mathematics.
39th out of 45? Less than Jordan? Jordan is more advanced than us? That doesn't make any sense. It's because there's been an incredible lack of education in this country. The average kid goes to school from 9 o'clock till 12 o'clock. There's no school after 12 o'clock. Teachers are the lowest paid and in that socialist system. If you're a taxi driver or a bus driver, you get paid much more than a teacher. So, doctors who spend 12, I don't know, years or so educating themselves are one of the lowest paid people in the country. The country has put education at a very low level in terms of its hierarchy of values, which is so anti-traditional Jewish attitude towards education. The Torah says, every Jew who says the Kriya Shema twice a day, the fundamental belief says, Ushinam tam levanecha, teach your son. Shinam tam lematam otam et benechem, teach your children. Teaching, learning, is so basically Torah culture. If you take the Torah out, so the culture becomes, I don't know what their values are, because I'm not so into it, but certainly not educating kids. We have to go back to education. We have to go back to the basic view of the Torah of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. Rabbi Kiba, who was the hero of the Jews and is the central figure during this period, said, Zeklal Gadol B'Torah. The greatest lesson of Torah is to love other people, other Jews, to respect people, to talk to people nicely and to understand they may have a different point of view. Not whatever I think is the way it has to be. So he put together the traditional Jewish value of education and the traditional Jewish value of respect and love for other Jews and other people and respect for divergence of opinions, then we can start forging a real Goy Echad, a real nation. Not just physically 6 million people who happen to have Jewish genes living in some piece of land someplace, but a nation which has a common set of values, a nation which is building a special spiritual kind of a society which will be a model for itself and for the world. And this is the challenge which we have today. So as we move on from this Yom HaTzmut to the coming year, we hope that every one of us will recommit ourselves to these traditional Jewish values. And just for a moment, speaking to a group of budding lawyers, Judaism has a lot to say about law. Law is the heart of the Torah, halacha. And the fundamental idea of Judaism towards law is tzedek, tzedek, tirdov, to pursue and pursue justice. Not to win the case. Not to get the largest fee. Not to get the Supreme Court justice position, but to pursue justice, to get truth in the courtroom. That's the goal of what Torah says is justice. And we say in our prayers, bring us back to the land. And the next thing we say is, Melech Ohev Tzedakah U'Mishpat. God wants there to be justice, righteousness and justice in the land. We want to keep that land. We have to have a dedication to true and honest justice. So I hope that all the budding lawyers here who will become, God's help, very good lawyers will also be traditional Jewish lawyers. Not like they say in the street, oh, he's a Jewish lawyer. I mean, sharp, can get you out, get you off the hook, win the case, he knows every trick in the book.
I mean, Jewish lawyer, the old-time Jewish lawyer. Tzedek, to go after justice. To go after justice, we'll be able to build a beautiful Jewish homeland, and we're able to see the final fulfillment of the prophecy. God will be with us, and will be a light to all the world. Mazel tov, and thank you very much.